For it is as if a man, going on a journey, summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to
investing their talents well, but to talk about what's going on in the world around them and what to do because of it. So in this story, the hero is the guy who dug the hole. I mean, he didn't play Robin Hood. He didn't steal the money and give it out to the poor. He was a slave, and that was his master's money. But what he did do was refuse to participate in this system that created these 100% returns on investment. He refused to participate in a system that exploited others, that took reapings from the work of others. He just stuck it in the ground. And why not? The guy already had more than he needed. Why did he need more? At least he wasn't doing any harm by sticking it in the ground. Now, I've heard a lot of sermons on this text, and I've never heard one that paints the guy with the hole as the hero. It's usually a sermon about how to invest your talents courageously in service to God. And there's nothing wrong with investing your talents courageously in service to the will of God. Perfectly fine thing to say. But if you read this story to say that, then you have to think about how much your worldview is clouded.
Then, to one, he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, "Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Then the one who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, "Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours." But his master replied, "You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return, I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. For as for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Holy wisdom, holy word.
I can't tell you what Matthew had in mind when he put this parable in his gospel. I do know that Matthew likes to punish people a lot. So if you got a good punishment at the end of the parable one, he's going for it. But I can tell you what I think the people in Jesus's day would have thought of this parable. And to get at that, we have to do a little background. First of all, they're talking about investing money, and they're talking about talents. Now, in English, talent means a certain skill that we may possess. And some people believe that it got into the English language as that definition from this parable. But in the ancient world, a talent was a measure of money. It was the measure of a lot of money. When nations paid national debts, they paid it in talents. Now, it's not exactly clear how much money we're talking about in today's value, because a talent was a measure of precious metals. And so one way of deriving the value is to say, well, it's so much precious metals then, what's the value of those metals now? And that's how much we're talking about. But you can't really do that because the precious metals may have changed in value over time. It took a lot more energy and effort to dig those out of the ground and refine them back then. So another way of measuring it is how much effort went into earning a talent. And one measure is that it was one talent equaled 6,000 drachmas. And a drachma was approximately what a person would earn a full day's labor. And remember, those were long days. Started sun up, ended sun down, long day. 6,000 days of that, which if a person were to work 7 days a week, 365 days a year, they would earn, if they took all that money, none was taken out of taxes, and they didn't spend a nickel, if they kept it all, in 13 years of hard labor, they could earn a talent. It's a lot of money. And this guy, who's the master, has 8 talents to invest. So that's extra money that's not tied up into his house or his land or any of his possessions or anything else. This is just investment money. Now, remember, when the story is being told is a time of great economic hardship. In terms of America, we could think of the Great Depression, sort of. Times were hard, and people were, just as in the Great Depression, lots of farmers were losing their lands. They were being pushed off their lands because they couldn't pay their mortgages. People were being pushed off their land, and those farmers who had lost their lands lost not only year-round income, but lost a place to live and food for their families. If you got pushed off your land, then the next thing you had to fall back on was day labor. So you went out and you worked and you made a drachma for a long day's work. And you only got paid when you worked. And since Israel at the time was an agrarian society, most of the labor was agrarian. And a lot of times on the farms, there just isn't a lot of work. So people struggled. Farmers became day laborers. Other people became beggars. Families had to make tough decisions about whether to support their oldest child or push them out, whether they could support their parents or leave them to their own devices. It was a terrible, wrenching time. And the people who were suffering knew who to blame, because they had to take out loans on their farms to pay the taxes that Rome imposed and the temple helped collect. And those loans were being taken from people like this wealthy guy. Which gets us to the investments. Investments at that time were limited. There wasn't a stock market back then. So you only had a few places where you could invest your money. One of them would have been one of the main ones was in loans. Now, you could make a loan and expect interest on that. It's mentioned here. But there are biblical lines in Exodus and in Deuteronomy that prohibit loaning money for interest to other Jewish people. So loaning at an interest would have been considered usury, and it would have been considered a bad thing. The other way you do it is you loan it out with the hopes that the farmers won't be able to pay it back, and that then you can foreclose on their lands and you can take their lands. Getting land was the primary capital investment in an agrarian society, so getting land was what you wanted to do, but it was hard to do because people didn't sell land as a commodity. They held on to their lands as hard as they could because it was home and food for their kids. So then we have this story about a slave owner who gives his slaves levels of responsibility to invest the money that he has lying around. It's not being used for anything else. It can be invested. The slaves take the money. The man goes on a trip, comes back, and the slaves report back that two of the slaves made 100% return on investment. Now, I don't know how many of you are into investments, but 100% return on your investment is a very, very, very good return. And we say good in our context, and that's part of the problem. In a capitalist society, if you make 100% return, you're either very lucky or you're very shrewd. But in the context of this society where Jesus was, to make 100% return on your investment would have meant that you engaged in practices which would have caused harm to someone. As the third slave said in this, I know that you reap where you do not sow, which means he took advantage of other people's labor, took the profits of that labor, and kept it for himself. So you have two slaves that make 100% return on investment, and one slave who takes the money that he's entrusted and buries it in the ground. Now, when we hear this story through the lens of the domination system, we hear this story as about the people with 100% return on investment as being the good people, and the guy who dug a hole and stuck the talent in the ground as being the bad person, because that's how the parable sets it up. But if we're hearing this through the lens of people who are struggling because of what investors are doing to them, who have lost everything, if you'd have heard this in the 1930s and having lost your farm to a big bank, you would hear this parable very differently. So in some ways, this parable is like a little test. Did you think that the people who made the big investment were the good guys? And the guy who dug the hole, the bad guy? I mean, to think that, you have to think that the slave owner, who's very, very wealthy, has all this money to invest. Remember, it is surrounded by lots and lots of people who are in dire need, and yet doesn't use his money to help them, uses his money to make more money when he already has more money than he can ever use. That would have struck people very differently. That's the challenge of this story. And I think that's why, if in fact Jesus told this parable, that's why he told it. Not to get people to think about by the system of domination that's all around us. We live in a world that's similar to what Jesus was experiencing in some ways. Poor people are getting poorer, rich people are getting richer. It's hard times for lots of people. And if you're doing well in this social order, you may be inclined to see the world through the lens of the guy who has all the money to invest. But if you've had your house foreclosed on, if you're company has taken your retirement benefits, if you've been fired, if you live in a neighborhood that's creating health hazards for your children, if you're worried about the future of the planet, then it can be read in a very, very different way. This slave owner who wants big returns for his investment was quite willing to use violence to punish people who didn't go along. And that's part of the story too. It's not sugarcoated. If you refuse to participate in the system will not be happy with you. And that's one way we can tell the Jesus story. But there is an alternative. First, we have to be aware that the way the world is set up is not the way it should be. And that's what this parable does. But once we come to that, then we come to the next question, what should it look like? And for us today, this weekend, it's the Festival of Hope. People putting in lots of time and energy, lots of work, not for their own benefit, not to make returns on their investment, not to enrich themselves, but on behalf of others. An economic system we've created here that models the way the world could be. A world where the ruling, guiding light of the economic system is to help people in need and not to enrich those who already have more than they need. That's why the Festival of Hope is important. Yes, it's great. We made around $8,000 yesterday. We'll make more today. And all of that's going to go in very good places. And that's wonderful. But what's also happening here is an example to the world of how things could be. That's the vision God has for the world. And that vision is for those who desperately need an alternative. Good news. Amen.